Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth every week at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and on voiceofashan.org at your convenience. Today, we begin a month of shows on politics and how it's personal for you. I'm bringing in experts and activists each week in October to address the specifics of these elections and how important your vote is. Next week, I'll talk with a panel of experts on the topic of police accountability and criminal justice reform. October 20th, Kathleen Rogers, president of Earth Day Network, will enlighten us on the politics of climate. And wrapping up the month will be Kendrick Washington of Washington State's ACLU office on regional politics and how they affect each of us every day. Today, I'm delighted to host Vashon's own Kevin Jones, editor of Indivisible, Vashon's weekly publication, for your consideration, and all-around political activist who lives in the thick of it all. Welcome, Kevin. Thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Susan. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are having a busy morning here on The Voice of Vashon. You just got off the Brown briefly.
We did, you know, and it's spirited conversation about the state of the election and the state of the country. So they're so intertwined. I'm just really happy to be here to continue the conversation.
Good. So we're going to talk today. Today, your job is to give us an overview of what's going on with the election, which, by the way, folks, is November 3rd. And Kevin, I believe ballots are going to drop within the next week here in Washington State. Is that correct?
You know, I'm told that we should have ballots in our mailboxes by October 19th, and they will be mailed on October 16th. And if you don't see a ballot by October 19th, people should contact their local county elections department and check out votewa.gov, V-O-T-E-W-A.gov, and that can give you everything you need to know in case something goes wrong. So definitely make note of that, because we want every voice to be counted.
And gee, what could go wrong? I want to start with the big overview question. How would you define what is at stake in this election?
You know, it seems like it's cliche that every time we have a presidential election, it's the most important election of our lifetimes. It's hard for me to go against that wisdom this election, and here's why. We know that we are in this tussle of values. The Obama-Biden administration made great strides forward in climate and social justice, resetting tax structures, increasing protections for us in terms of air quality, water quality. And now the existing administration is pushing all of that back. So there's several issues there that really matter to people in their daily lives.
Yeah, there are. Things like Social Security. What's at stake with Social Security and infrastructure?
You know, what I see in those, there's really some great battles going on. One is privatization. And if you couple the notion of privatization, like infrastructure building toll roads, like Social Security turning into a private investment account for you, what that does is it transfers control to individuals. And if you look at what powerful individuals, some of them in this country, are doing, is under the banner of economic freedom. And what that really means is don't tax the rich. If I earn billions of dollars, I have every right to keep it. Why should I be taxed on my hard effort, my hard labor, my investment in earning those dollars? And that really goes against the grain of the fact that we all contributed to the society in which really wealthy people get wealthy, right? We build the roads. We paid for those roads.
Mm-hmm.
We built the communications infrastructure.
They don't get wealthy without us.
And we built an amazing market in which wealth can be created. So it's really intriguing to me that privatization is something that we need to be very cautious about. And we here on Vashon, we have public service provided ferries. And that didn't always used to be the case. And back in the history, right, when we ended up with public ferry service, the private ferry service went on strike and basically shut down transit from Vashon to the mainland. And people didn't stand for that very long. So,
well, and you bring to mind a comparison. If we're looking at privatizing Social Security, privatizing schools, and privatizing infrastructure, I would like to use healthcare as a comparison. It is currently a private industry, and it's not working.
It certainly has escalating costs and reductions in the amount of access. And the idea that, you know, we've currently heard from this administration that they have a great healthcare program just in the next 2 weeks. We'll tell you what it is, right? How many times have we heard that?
Yeah, several weeks ago.
You know, if anybody's concerned about healthcare, and boy, who shouldn't be right now, the notion that this administration is currently in the Supreme Court trying to remove the Affordable Care Act, which is the one provision that does protect us against pre-existing conditions, despite the president's, you know, signed piece of paper, his declaration, which has no bearing on anything, this administration truly is failing to produce a better alternative and working to, again, strike down some of those advances that we saw in the last administration.
Where in the country is this sort of thing most at risk? And that brings to my mind also voting rights. But what states are the biggest battlegrounds for the presidential race?
So here's, let's get into the where the state of the race, if you will.
Okay.
I think that's where you'd like to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just as a prelude to that, so what I've done, I've looked at a lot of data. I look at like six or seven different pundits and what they have to say. And what I did is I sort of took all the states and I put them in order from the bluest blue to the reddest red. And it's District of Columbia to Wyoming. And I put them in the order of, you know, which states went for Clinton in 16 and which states went for Trump. And so you have like this sandwich, right? A blue bread on the top, red bread on the bottom. But this, anything that makes a sandwich interesting is what's in the middle, right? That's where the battleground's going to happen. And so if you look at the what's in the middle, it's intriguing that there are like three states which are really key to winning the White House for Vice President Biden: Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And those are the three states that all shocked us in 2016, right? So there's not too much surprise there that those states would be in play here in 2020.
You mean they shocked us by going for Trump?
It turns out that depending on which polls you look at, all three of those states are currently lined to support Biden presidency by as much as 5 percentage points or more. And there's a couple of other states that are interesting, like Florida, which currently, again, depending on the poll, the predominance of polls show that Biden is leading by 3%, which is essentially within the margin of error, right?
Yeah. So
officially, that's kind of like a tie. But there's also Iowa, which is emerging as the polling numbers look favorable, generally for Biden. And what that does is that gives us the 277 Electoral College votes that Biden and Harris need to get into the White House.
Wait, say that one more time. If all five of those states go for Biden in the popular vote?
I'm glad you asked, because what we need for Biden and Harris to get into the White House is for all of the 2016 blue states to stay blue. And that looks promising right at the moment. And three 2016 Trump states to flip.
I see. Okay.
Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania.
All right. I understand now.
Yeah. And that gets us to actually 279. And then after that, there's some, you know, maybe if one of those doesn't come through, maybe there's another state like Ohio or Florida that can come in and provide Electoral College votes. So, but the main path is, as I see it, is Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania right now.
Then you mentioned in the note that you wrote to me the Senate, yes. And that's the Senate races, correct?
The Senate is very interesting. And of those three states that I just mentioned, only Michigan has a role to play in the Senate, mainly because in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, neither of those states have U.S. senators running for re-election. So in the Senate path, here's what's intriguing. First of all, we have to probably give up on Doug Jones in Alabama. He is currently running well behind Tuberville in Alabama. And he's 18 points behind. So we're going to lose a Senate seat, a Democratic Senate seat, almost guaranteed. So in order for progressives or Democrats to control the U.S. Senate, we actually need to gain three seats just to tie.
Minimally, right.
We need to gain four to control. Well, we've already lost Alabama, right? And so now we have to gain five to control. Well, how are we going to do that? Well, here's the path as I see it. First of all, we have to protect Peters in Michigan, as we've already mentioned. Then we need to have Colorado, Arizona, Maine, and North Carolina all change hands. And so that's former Governor Hickenlooper and Cory Gardner in Colorado. And that looks good right now with Hickenlooper up by 7 points or more. In Arizona, Kelly against McSally, and Kelly's up by about 7 points right now. Maine, we all know Susan Collins. Right? And being contested by Sarah Gideon, who's currently up about 5 points right now.
That's too close.
I wish it were six. And then North Carolina, Tom Tillis, who's now a little bit famous in the news for having contracted COVID just in the last week, is being contested by Cal Cunningham. And most of the polls show Cunningham is running 6 points ahead. So if all of those things happen, then we're tied in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And tied in the Senate is actually a terrible place to be.
Yes, nothing. Even less than nothing now would happen, correct?
Well, I think so. Because, what we know is that the majority party has all of the Senate. They basically they chair all of the committees. The Senate, the McConnell, right now the Senate leader, is from the predominant party. In the past, when the Senate has been tied, they've split the responsibilities. So certain committees have Democratic chairs, certain committees have Republican chairs, and past history says it is a mess in trying to, that's a quote, by the way.
Yeah, it is a mess.
in trying to get things done. So now what we are is we're hopeful that a few other states who are amazingly in play will also switch seats. And those are Iowa and Georgia and Alaska and Montana and Kansas. Literally every one of those states, the recent polling is within plus or minus 2%.
Oh my gosh.
So what that tells me is that the states that we need to tie in the U.S. Senate are all looking pretty good right now. This is all based on polling, and I say that, I've said that five times, which means you have to cross your fingers, right?
Right, that the polls can be relied upon.
Yes, and I'll tell you what the fly in the ointment is in just a moment.
Okay.
But it also tells me that there are five states that the polling indicates could go either way, which means there's five battleground Senate seats to allow us to achieve a progressive control of the Senate.
And are those the five you just mentioned?
Yes.
Iowa, Georgia, Alaska, Montana, and Kansas?
Exactly right. Yeah. Now, here's the fly in the ointment. In 2016, a pollster named the Trafalgar Group was apparently one of the few pollsters who indicated Trump would win in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And if you look at their polling data, and they actually, while they're only rated a C minus by a polling rater 538, Nate Silver,
mm-hmm.
is sort of infamous for telling us in November 2016 that Clinton had an 80% chance of winning. So this is another grain of salt we're asking our listeners to consider. But the Trafalgar Group made that call that all three of those states would go to Trump. Trafalgar, by the way, is very aligned with people on the right. I mean, amazingly aligned. So you got to wonder how much they heard about Russian interference in the election. So that's another sort of conspiracy theory, many conspiracy theories. But if you look at their numbers, right now that 6% lead in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania for Biden and Harris,
mm-hmm.
it's cut down to about 2.5%.
Mm.
And the 5% lead for Biden and Harris in Michigan goes to -1. So it's just, I know one of the things that you're going to ask is what keeps me up at night.
Yeah, that's it,
Relying on polling data, which in 2016 was, it definitely said that Clinton won the popular vote. And that was quite accurate, actually.
Yes.
The question is now whether the Trafalgar Group has some insight that every other pollster is missing.
Well, here's another question, because we talk about the popular versus the electoral vote. In 2016, I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, most of the 50 states were going strictly with the electoral vote and not necessarily voting along with or in alignment with the popular vote. My understanding is that for this election, as many as 14 states have agreed that the Electoral College will go with the popular vote. Is that correct? And how do you see that as a potential influence on the ultimate election?
Well, my understanding is that's actually not correct.
Oh.
But here's the nuance. Is that, yes, 14 states have passed something called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. And if there are sufficient states who agree and sign up to that compact, then every state who is a member of the compact will tell their electors to vote in accordance with the national popular vote, not their state popular vote. But we don't have enough states yet who signed up for the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact to actually implement that provision.
So what would be the tipping point?
So right now I would have to, there's a number of states who could adopt the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact and actually put us over that line, but those are state legislative decisions, and I haven't tracked where we are in terms of how soon that might happen, but it will not happen between now and November 3rd.
Okay.
Yeah. It's something to watch, and interestingly, we've actually, at one time I was factoring that into my recommendations, because if we end up getting progressive legislators like senators into those key states who haven't yet joined the compact, but we can support progressive senators in those states, which is likely to drive down ballot support for progressive state legislators, then that could move those state legislators to adopt the compact.
But that wouldn't happen before this election.
No, it would not happen before the election. And I haven't actually kept up, so another state may have moved in that direction, which I think is a healthy direction for us to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one way to basically remove the Electoral College from influencing the presidential outcome without having to legislate the Electoral College away.
On a federal level, yeah. So in your notes, you said Nancy Pelosi told us to focus on gaining state legislatures If neither candidate gains 270 electoral college votes, the president is decided by Congress. One vote per state delegation. Where do those state delegations come from? Who are those people?
Right. So a state delegation, my understanding, is that you look at your total number of state legislators and I'm pretty sure it goes this way. You look at your total number of state legislators and count up the number of Democrats and the number of Republicans. And if you have more Republicans in your state legislative delegation, then that vote would from that state would go to support the Republican presidential candidate.
The electoral vote. Ooh, wow. And so you said we have 24 that are currently Democratic and 26 that are Republican.
So the expectation is that if neither candidate, presidential candidate, gets to 270 electoral college votes, the president, our next president, will be decided by Congress, and there's almost guaranteed that Trump would win.
Okay, so how do the voters in this country, whether they are Democrat or Republican, overcome decision about the president by Congress or even by the Electoral College, or at least by Congress? How do we get around that?
Well, we need to count all the ballots. We need to process every ballot. We need to count every vote. And we need to protect the results of the election. And so one of the things that is now in our common consciousness, we're hearing more and more about it in the news, which prompted Speaker Pelosi to make that statement, is an article written in The Atlantic by a man named Gelman. And there's also a group called the Transition Integrity Project, which was a bipartisan assembly of over 100 people to look at this presidential transition in 2020 to 2021 based on the likely election outcome and based on the personalities. Now, we're talking about President Trump.
Right.
His statements to hold on to power, mail-in ballots are all fraudulent, etc. So they looked at possible outcomes. Here's what could happen. If we don't allow all the ballots to be counted and allow time for that, what's likely to happen is the votes for President Trump will predominate on Election Day because his supporters are not afraid of COVID, or at least claiming not to be. They're going to go to the polls. They shun the idea of being safe and voting by mail, and their votes, by definition, will then be counted first.
It's called
the Red Mirage.
Yes.
We know that all of the mail-in ballots, while they're received and ready to be counted, many states don't allow them to start counting until the polls close. And so the voters have all gone to the polling stations, they've all pushed the buttons to vote, and at 8 o'clock that night, then the machines start counting the mail-in ballots that had been received.
That night being November 3rd.
Starting at 8 o'clock on November 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine that this president will claim early results indicate he won. All of these ballots we're counting now are fraudulent, and we should just quit counting those ballots and go ahead with the returns that came in on election night.
Can he stop the counting of the ballots?
He cannot, but the states apparently can, and the courts apparently can, just like happened in 2000 when they stopped counting in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Bush became the president instead of Gore. So it's really important that several things happen. One is that we get our ballots in as soon as we can.
We being Washington state voters.
It's important across the whole country, in my opinion.
Ah, yes, okay, right, I agree.
Because we, as a country, need to show that we're a democracy, and we need to show that the systems we have work, and that they can be counted on. in that despite all the claims of fraud, we know that Kris Kobach's commission to look into voter fraud, into the 3 million illegal votes in 2016 to Clinton and falsely, increased her popular vote numbers, that's all a myth. There is no substantial fraud in voting in America.
And that's been proven several times over.
Absolutely. So we need to make sure that those ballots get safely into the election centers and get them there early. Any ballot that's dawdling in the mail, which we also know has been slowed down by this administration, just may not make it into the election center in time to be counted. Many states have a cutoff that says they need your ballot to be actually received by the election center by a certain day, or they don't count them. Washington, it turns out, doesn't have that. As long as your ballot's postmarked or in a ballot box, it will be counted no matter how long it takes the mail to get it to the election center.
Well, and each state does have different rules about that. So, yes, folks, check your state. In the 3 minutes that we have left, Kevin Jones, you added a question to the list of mine, and I think it's an excellent one. Because our democracy is essentially on the rails right now, or on whatever, in trouble. Did our founders set us an impossible task? Is it impossible to keep a democracy going for longer than a couple hundred years?
You know, Susan, we really should have a real talk conversation about this particular topic. Let me just suggest that if our readers, if our listeners read How Democracies Die by Levitsky and Zoblat, the concluding words there, let me find the right place.
Yeah, I've been reading that book. It's chilling.
We must make our democracy truly inclusive. America's democratic norms, at their core, have always been sound. But for much of our history, they were accompanied, indeed sustained, by racial exclusion. Now those norms must be made to work in an age of racial equality and unprecedented ethnic diversity. Few societies in history have managed to be both multiracial and genuinely democratic. That is our challenge. It's also our opportunity. If we meet it, America will truly be exceptional. And if you read How Democracies Die, and then you read Alan Bullock's amazing book, Hitler, A Study in Tyranny, the parallels are frightening. We are seeing now this opportunity of people of color in our growing communities in this country, having taken a great step forward, we thought, in the Obama administration, and now the pushback and the rise of hate crimes and white nationalism in this country. This is a struggle that our country is in the middle of. How do we move forward? What do we see? How do we measure that? And what is it going to take for us to truly be a land of liberty and justice for all?
True, true. And not only multiracial, but multicultural. Let's embrace all those cultures. I'd like to close with this fantastic quote that our own Truman O'Brien found that really describes the person we are considering, at least one of the people we're considering, to run this country for another 4 years, and his attitude about the rest of us. He hosted a super spreader, as in COVID, event to honor a justice who would have the government control over your body but refused the duty to care for it. And when the virus he helped go around came around, he availed of the health care he would deny others, financed by the taxes he refuses to pay. That is not a person who is going to govern the entire country. And Kevin Jones, I cannot thank you enough for giving us this wonderful overview of what's coming up. And folks, politics are personal. Stay tuned to Real Talk. For the entire month of October, we're going to bring you more and more reasons to pay attention. Thanks for listening.